We have some minutes for questions and comments.
Thank you so much for your account of the Holy Ordinary. I can't help but think that at some point, the notion of the Holy Ordinary amounts to a foreclosure for some of us, a premature closure for some of us. And that as we think about this, we have to work through the tensions between the lack and the excess, the isolation and the sense of community. And I'd like you to think with us a little bit about the tension between, say, Jean-Luc Nancy's notion that love thy neighbor as thyself, for example, constitutes an impossibility and therefore a lack. On the other hand, you have Jean-Luc Marion, who speaks of Abraham and Isaac, the story, as an account of excess. How do you work with these tensions as you mature into the Holy Ordinary? Right.
An excellent question. For me, I came to a point where I realized that the tensions were really an antinomy. That I've used the word in the text, which may pass by, they're complementary. They don't conflict. That they feed upon one another as a true antinomy does. Light and darkness. Without light, light you don't know what darkness is. Without darkness, you don't know what light is. Without solitude, you don't know what community is. Without community, you don't know what solitude is. And I shouldn't just say, no, this is experiential. So it's being able to live with an antinomy in which you see the two as fulfillments of one another. So that, for me, experientially, I've learned that my vocation is really to live that contrapuntal movement, contrapuntal dance between solitude and community. Not to pick one or the other, but also to learn that one can pick one or the other without choosing it by an habitual way of behavior that doesn't allow, usually it goes in the direction of one, by not allowing the other. That, or by mistaking one as the way to holiness, rather than seeing both of them as involving wholeness as a definition of holiness. But we have to be attentive to it because often in our society, the solitude and silence of can get lost in terms of the noise of the visitor. So there's sometimes built into our society a default position that we have to constantly combat. So that's what I would say next.
We're indebted to your disclosure today. Represents a unique paradigm, I think, that I'm seeing more of in the academy to some extent. I'm wondering the sort of kenotic, self-disclosing, bringing others along with you along your path of the journey, that dynamic as you've brought it to us here today. Does it represent I'm trying to get a time frame in your teaching praxis as to when you would have consciously perhaps embraced that to a greater degree. And then number two, what observations have you made in terms of students' receptivity, perhaps among undergraduates and maybe hard-nosed graduate students?
And even colleagues.
And even harder-nosed colleagues, and whether that represents whether you are seeing trends, perhaps different levels of thirst out there? Thank you.
That's, again, a very good question. When did it begin in terms of my own academic life? To some extent, I think it began with my choice of dissertation topic, which had in it, as many choices do, something mysterious about it. I don't mean to mystify anything here, it's just it's my impression, that I chose to write about the religion of slaves because it seemed to me to be really important, that there was a wisdom there that needed to be heard. And I chose to write about it in a certain way because in the experience of doing it, I found healing in terms of the pain in my own family's life. Those of you who haven't read, most of you I'm sure haven't read Sorrowful Joy, don't know that my father was murdered three months before I was born by a white man in Mississippi who was not tried or even arrested for the murder. And that act of violence had a long impact upon my life. And writing about the religion of slaves for me was in some way a coming to terms not only with that act of violence and its effect upon my family's life, but upon the act of violence of enslavement and all the violence that accompanied it, in trying to write about that in writing about slavery. So there was this personal dimension to my choice of that topic. And when I would write at night, I mean, there were times when I felt as if there were people looking over my shoulder, that there were voices. I was channeling something. And I'm convinced that the reason why slave religion has lasted and been influential upon people is not only because it's good scholarship, but because some of that because those voices speak to other people through that vehicle. So that's probably the beginning of this personal dimension of my own scholarship. When it became really conscious for me was much later. And I think what made it more conscious for me was the experience, which you also don't know about unless you've read Sorrowful Joy, that when I was 50 years old, I went back to Bay St. Louis, felt drawn back to Bay St. Louis, and went to the grave of my father. And I'd been to that grave many times before on visits. For the first time, I was really moved to tears. And I cried for the loss that I had felt, the absence of my father, for the absence that my mother had felt and my sisters had felt. And then, in my mind's eye, I saw him shot and falling. And it was as if he fell into my life and that we met for the first time. It was a very powerful experience. And so after that, my teaching began to take on a different coloration. And I began to move back to literature, teaching some courses in literature. And through dealing with the stories that we were reading in literature, they kind of opened me up to this, even more to this personal dimension. And then I was asked to give a set of lectures at Harvard Divinity School, which were called the Witt Lectures, in which the premise was that you would speak autobiographically about religion and its presence in the modern life. So I did that, and that's what resulted, those lectures resulted in this little brief spiritual memoir. After it was published, I thought, oh, what have I done? But the response of my hard-nosed colleagues was very positive. Among people who are non-believers, people who, probably, I don't know what their attitude is about personal revelation in terms of teaching, but who found the book meaningful for them and who found themselves and aspects of their lives through analogy to that text. So I think there is a mood that's more accepting of this kind of approach. Now, it's not, I mean, I don't, this is not what I do all the time. Most of the time, I'm pretty much a historian. But I find that I have the freedom, and you know, perhaps it's the freedom of approaching retirement, to open this, this side of myself up, and I really feel the need to do it in some ways. And it's why I've tried it again tonight. I don't have enough distance in terms of you know, knowing what other people are doing in other parts of the country, in academia, to know how widespread a trend this is. But I think you're right that it is a trend. I mean, part of it one sees, you know, the popularity of memoirs. And that's clearly a trend in our culture right now. And also memoirs that deal with the holiness of quotidian life. A number of those have come out. Patricia Hampel, I think Charles mentioned, Kathleen Norris, the Quotidian Mysteries, Annie Dillard to some extent in some of her work, and the range of other people who could be mentioned. So there's a kind of popularity of the memoirs. As a last comment on your question, going on too long here, there's a certain ironic aspect to this, because my daughter, Emily Roboteau, has published a novel called The Professor's Daughter. And when I first heard that title, it chilled me to the bone. As friends have read it, they said, did this actually happen? Oh, no, it's just fiction. It's all fiction. But so thanks for your question.
Hi, so you talk mostly dealt with fiction. I was wondering if you found the Holy Ordinary in poetry as well, if it was a different type of moment, or is if entire existence of poetry is to be that moment.
That's a wonderful that question again. I think you're right. This course that I'm teaching now is including, for the first time, poetry. And I probably foolishly have picked T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets to attempt to deal with. I see you smiling, so you know why I'm requiring that for the students to read. But I think you're absolutely right that poets, this is the mother's milk for many poets. One can think of a wide range of them. This may or may not work, you know, including that Four Quartets in this course, because it's a very difficult poem to grapple with. But I'm going to try it with the bright students and see how they respond to it. The other area where I'm venturing into it, and I think it's extremely important, is film, because of the nature of film. We see in the course, we read in the course, George Bonanos' novel, Diary of a Country Priest. And we also see the film that Robert Bresson, the great French director, made of that movie, and talk about the differences between the written word and the filmic image. And we'll also be seeing a film by I hate to use the term experimental filmmaker, but a non-narrative filmmaker named Nathaniel Dorsky, who's written a book called Devotional Cinema, for those of you who are interested in knowing about film. I can't remember the name of this particular film that we're going to see. And we're going to see the film. It's not a DVD. It's, that kind of film in a theater with the big screen, you know. To get the full experience. And the film is non-narrative, but what it is, I mean, it's shots. It's shots of raindrops on the street in public, of the sun glancing off a store window. And it's not just nature. It's the beauty of objects that surrounds us in day-to-day life. And it's about how to see that. So that's another genre that I'm hoping to venture into.
Thank you so much. thank you all for coming. I want to remind you that this talk, this event, this experience will be on our website in about a week or two, so you can revisit it soon. And thanks again for the gift of your presence tonight. Thank you.